Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 226 of the Board Game Barbecue, brought to you by Advent Games. You've got Connor here on the mic with Adrian. How you going, Adrian?
I'm doing good, buddy. How you doing? Long time no see, right?
Yeah. I feel like the last time we saw each other was like the 10th day of Christmas.
Yes, that's right. The 12 podcasts over Christmas, the 12 pods of Christmas. And yeah, I think we did a couple together. So yeah, that was day 10.
Cool. That was pretty cool. It was fun. As interesting as we are, we've got an even more interesting person to talk to on this episode. The one and only, I should say, Travis Hancock of Facade Games. Thank you for joining us, Travis. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Glad to be here.
Coming in from sunny, cold, miserable
Ohio. Cold. Yeah. Ohio, yep.
Yeah. Ohio, very good. So we've got Travis here to sort of have a bit of a chat, have a bit of a yarn, probably keep us on an even keel. Hey, Adrian.
Yeah, someone has to today. And just to point out, do you understand what Connor says most of the time, having a yarn, no drama, all that kind of stuff? Because it's all Aussie slang he's using. Oh. Having a yarn. It's hilarious. I get that a lot, though. Sometimes I write to people, like when we're chatting, to arrange some of these interviews, like no drama. And then they're like, what? Like, is there a problem? And they don't understand that I'm just saying, I'm saying no problem. Like, it's all good. But yeah, it's funny. How about you, Connor, man? What did you get up to this Christmas? We haven't caught up at all, so.
Yeah, well, I went home and saw my family. So I went back to Kilmore, and it was stinking hot, man. Like, it was so hot. And so I normally live by the beach. I'm pretty lucky. So there's a big, like, dam or reservoir. It was more like a pond. I wouldn't even call it a reservoir. And I was like, well, you can't swim in that. But it was awesome. It was such a great time. My niece has got a Nintendo Switch for Christmas.
Ooh,
and
nice.
One of them cried. She cried. She was so happy, which is like, that's kind of part of the course for my family, like crying when you get a
great Nintendo thing
or something like that. But it was good. I got like a list of games that's like 20 long that I can talk about. But yeah, I might have to spread them over a couple of episodes. But yeah, it was heaps of fun. What about you, AD? Any good stories? There's always good stories coming from you.
Well, I told a few of my stories last time, but I neglected to mention one of the bigger stories because I was just trying to sweep that under the rug. But I got called out for it because a bunch of people were at my house and they know about it. So anyway, as we know, we built Finn a zip line for Christmas and he was involved with that process. And he's 7, Travis, just so you know. And he believed that he was building a washing line for our family and had no idea that he was actually building a zip line for himself. And you know what it's like at Christmas, man? Everything is like rush, rush, rush. You don't have any time to get everything done. So I was like, oh, look, they're not that heavy, these kids. They're only like 30 kilos. And the wire thing on the zip line is weight rated to like 130. So it's fine. I'll just put one post in at the end and I'll cantilever it later on and secure it behind itself to hold the position. Anyway, I had a few drinks on Christmas Day and we can see where this is going.
Yep.
Finn was like, you go on it, Dad. Go on, you chicken, you big chicken. You don't dare on it. So I got on it and I snapped that post down the end instantaneously with my fat butt and it broke the zip line. And then I was like, man, devastated. And he was really upset at himself because he's like, it was my fault. I told him to do it. I shouldn't have egged him on. I was like, dude, it's fine. We'll just fix it. And he's like, but Boxing Day, like, because we have a party on Boxing Day and we have a heap of families here. And I was like, I was just racking my brains. I had to figure out a way to fix this thing. And I'm not actually native Australian, but I had I did the most Queenslander Aussie thing I've ever done in my life, which was to drive my ute into the paddock, strap it onto the top of the ute and drive and pull the cable tight. And hopefully none of the kids would hit the vehicle at the end of the zip line, which I did test and was fine. But yeah, like basically we had this ute parked in the paddock with the wire strapped around it, pulled tight, and it worked, man. Like, it held up the whole day. Kids had a great time. So, yeah, I felt really proud of myself when I did it. I was like, this is genius. I felt like I was in one of those Jurassic Park car or something. I was even humming the tune as I drove it. No, yeah, no reason, no dinosaurs, but like, like, this is it. We're doing it. And I had a great time. And yeah, it worked out. I saved Christmas. Admittedly, as Connor said, I did break Christmas in the first place. But yeah, that was really my sort of big story from Christmas.
Well, seeing as Travis is still here and hasn't reported you to any international authorities, I think maybe we should hand it over to him. So, look, Travis, you know, you've really, as I'll use another Aussie colloquialism, kicking goals with facade games. Tell the audience sort of how you got into board game design. Is it something that you've always done? Sort of tell us a bit more about yourself.
Okay, yeah. Let's see. Well, I mean, I grew up in a big family. I'm actually second of nine.
Whoa. And,
yeah.
Quick side question. Is that why you always put nine players in your games?
Oh, my gosh. I never thought about that.
It's a deep psychological trauma. Whoa. That's what it is.
Oh, my gosh. No, I thought it was nine because, I mean, usually we want it to be like big, and so we go up to eight, and there's always got to be something for like an odd man out if there's like even teams. So I'm just like, oh, we'll just go with nine. But I think you might be onto something there.
So you can play it all together, guaranteed, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Everyone has a space.
Yep. But yeah, I played that a lot. And then kind of my extended family is pretty big too. And whenever we'd all get together, all the teenagers would go down to the basement and play Mafia, lots of Mafia,
werewolves, yeah,
you know, classic. And that was just like, that was like some of my greatest memories, was just like pulling off the perfect Mafia lie. It just like got me going. So kind of that's the backstory from my childhood. But then in college, I started working on a game. It was kind of like a way to fix Mafia in my mind, just like add some structure to it. I think a lot of people have sort of done that kind of thing. But just kind of worked on that passively, and then I graduated, married my wife Holly around then too. And about a year and a half after graduating, I had a job. She was working as a teacher. But we finally got our first game ready, and that was Salem. Now it's Salem 1692. So we launched that on Kickstarter, just kind of hoping for, I think our goal was like $6,000, and then it just kind of randomly just took off. It did 100,000, and we were just, it was crazy. And kind of around that time, I was throwing different stuff at the wall. I didn't like, my job was good, but I kind of felt like I needed to be on my own, like running my own thing somehow. Sure. So I was trying all kinds of different stuff. And when this one took off, I'm just like, okay, this is the opportunity to make the jump. And so I quit my job and just really dove into the game thing. And we started working on our next one. And we kind of held our breath for that next year and a half as we were working on the next one, which was Tortuga 1667. But then we launched that one. And then like the first few minutes of launching on Kickstarter, people were just backing out like crazy, and it was taking off. And that was the moment I was like, okay, like this is sustainable. I can keep doing this.
Yeah, it's so cool.
That was an even better moment. It's like, okay, this the first one wasn't a fluke. We can keep doing this. So that was great. And then since then we launched Deadwood 1876, and then Bristol 1350 a couple years ago, and then made a little party game called Trophies. It's been a lot of fun, and we're gonna build out that line too. But then just a few days ago, we launched our latest in this, the Dark City series, we call it, which is Hollywood 1947. So yeah, that's where we're at. We're still working full time. My wife, she's the graphic designer behind the thing.
Excellent.
She's very just artistic minded, very organized. So she makes them look good. We've worked with a really good illustrator named Sarah Keel. She's always been our illustrator. She's been great. And yeah, that's kind of the nutshell of how we got here.
So I read something online about you guys and your playtesting methods. And obviously in a Euro game or something like that, to play test, you can play it solo, you know, and do the moves and actions of four players. And potentially you could play it with two players and, you know, two people could play either 1v1 or you can play 2v2. And it's quite easy to math out and calculate moves and decide, is this a good move? Is this a bad move? Tick this off. That's unbalanced. But something that I read about yourselves is that you play it two players between the two of you to get the game off the ground and start that off. But in those games, they're all about lying to each other, manipulating things. And if you're playing it at 6-player, 9-player, or whatever, when you're play testing, how does that process work? How do you note down who knows what information? Do you have a form or some sort of thing behind it that you go, he knows this, this player doesn't know that, this lady here, she doesn't understand that? How does that all work? Because that blows my mind, because I can't track it if I'm playing it on my own with 9 other players.
Right. No,
I don't know what's going on.
I definitely need paper like at each spot, and sometimes I'll physically move, like, okay, now I'm this guy, now I'm this guy, and I'll write notes to myself, like, okay, this guy knows this, like, this guy's trying to hide this fact. My wife, she just kind of jumps from person to person. She's very good at being multiple people, I guess.
Do you do voices?
We should. We probably have. I think we have, actually. But yeah, I mean, that's in the early stages. Yeah, it's some of that. But we do try to get groups together as much as we can. We always promise cookies. And that usually draws out at least 5 to 7 to 8 people.
You get me, Adrian, coming.
Yeah, you get me.
Like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, okay. If there's cookies or biscuits available, I'm down.
Okay, yeah.
I'm a bit of a cookie connoisseur, actually, if I'm honest. I'm a cookie snob. I'll give you that. I love making them myself. So,
didn't you have a cookie, a Biscoff shot?
Yes, I did, actually. Yeah, do you know Biscoff? Do you have Biscoff over there, Travis?
Yes.
You know, like the liquid cream stuff? You can dip like, I don't know, biscuits into or churros into and things like that.
I don't know if it's like thin. I mean, it's peanut butter, no?
I went to a burger place, which is kind of that of Willy Wonka's burger place. It's like nuts, crazy, huge cocktails, Biscoff in a massive jar that they heat up so you can dip things into. And it arrived on my table and my partner looked at me and I looked at the shot and it was supposed to be a dipping sauce. I just picked it up and shot it down and it didn't sit well. Let's just say that. I won't be doing that again.
I am Connor's total lack of surprise. Let's just put it that way. You mentioned, like, after Salem launched and you're just like, oh, my God, like, this is – or Tortuga, I should say. You were like, we're on to something. What was that feeling like knowing that, like, people actually really like not only our first game but they're looking forward to our second game? That must have been a big buzz and a really, really good feeling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, top five of my life, I think, just remembering that moment, just, you know, thinking ahead, like, that I could keep doing this. Cause I love it. I love my job. Like, coming up with the games is just so fun. And then I think there's the business side of me too, likes figuring out how to market them and sell them and kind of seeing all the pieces come together. So yeah, I mean, it's been so fun and just kind of pinching myself that we get to keep doing this. So.
Yeah. Nice. Good. So you do this as a full-time thing now, right? So this is when this transfers from being a hobby and fun to being, this is my job. I have to take this somewhat seriously to a degree.
Yeah.
What do you feel has been like an emotional change in you towards board games themselves? Even not just that of your own, of potentially, like, I don't know, do you still back Kickstarters? Do you go out and buy games and they just sit and shrink and you're like, one day I'm going to play this game? Like,
yeah, there's definitely been a shift. I think the main thing is that, you know, whenever we have time to play games, we're testing our own games because we have to. Like, you know, we got to keep them churning. So I very rarely get to play other games. Like I try to, because it's good to like kind of bring in new ideas and just kind of see what's going on out there. But yeah, I mean, definitely a lot more of just testing our stuff and working on our stuff, which I don't mind too much, because really the games I make are my perfect games.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yep. True.
Yeah. You know, it's like, if it's like what game I want to play. And so I really enjoy playing them, which is nice.
That's something that I've heard, is that you should try and design the things that you like. Therefore it always is enjoyable to a degree, you know? So,
right. Yeah. So that's good. I'm definitely, you know, I look at all the boxes closer of other games, you know, it's like, or I open it up and see like what their components are and kind of take notes like, okay, like this is a really cool component, or I like how they laid out these rules, or I like this graphic. So I'm always, you know, kind of dissecting other stuff out there to get more ideas. So that's, I guess that's kind of ruined that a little bit for me. I can't just enjoy a game anymore. I'm like thinking about it all the time.
But I suppose that's, like you said, that's good for, you know, you sort of take an influence. You talk about boxes. I think, you know, something that will stick out with your games is the fact that they don't look like boxes when they're on the shelf. They look like something else.
Yeah, yeah. They're, yeah, I'll do the big reveal. They're in book boxes, yeah. yeah, no, we had a lot of fun with that. Growing up, whenever, like, we had a game where the box got ruined, my mom would just like throw away the game. She's like, once the box is ruined, the game is ruined. What? I think that like really traumatized me. Yeah, stuck with me. So I'm like, oh shoot, like I gotta have a good box that no one's gonna ruin. And so kind of right away with Salem, we're like, you know, there's so many games out there. We want to stand out with this game and have it be a cool box. And so I think we were walking through a craft store and we saw just like a little faux book and we're like, ah, like that's it. Just like kind of imagining the fun way to open the book and enter the story of the game, basically. So yeah, it's worked well, and we're still running with that book thing. It's been fun.
Have you found that liberating in the fact that you know where you are, what size you have, what you can work with, or have you found that almost like a bit of a constraint where it's like, how can I make this thing work that I love so much in this size? Is it easier or harder?
That's a great question. I actually think it's easier in a way, because it's definitely a constraint, but it definitely gets us thinking creatively, because, you know, we can't ever have more than like 89 cards basically in any game. And that, I think that forces us to say like, okay, how can we combine cards or like simplify or delete stuff or make the cards like super interesting so that you don't need a lot of them. So, you know, we're very focused on what we can fit in the box. There's the cards. Sometimes we'll use like these little roll up mats that are like small game boards or just like, and I think it's also forced us to put as cool of stuff as we can in the games, because you only have so much space, so you might as well use it really well.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
yeah,
just like put the extra money and design time in like making something really cool, like a cool mini or really cool dice or something like that. So yeah, so it's the size constraint, but then also, you know, like I mentioned, all our games go up to 9 players and it starts to add up. Like once every player has their own character card and maybe a loyalty card and then a hand of a few cards, like you're kind of there. And so kind of that contrast of like a large player count, you know, up to 9 people around the table, but everything fitting in this tiny box. It's been a fun constraint, though. I actually really like designing around that. So,
yeah. Speaking of design, so you mentioned early on playing, you know, Mafia and Werewolf with your family, and you can definitely see that, particularly like in Bristol with the social deduction. But I remember playing Bristol and thinking, this for me is the first time that social deduction has then felt like a game as well, like there's a great game attached to it. What are some of the other influences that's not just gone into to Bristol, but some of your other games as well. What's helped you along that design process?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes back to when you play with someone who's a bad liar, I hate to see them squirm. I hate to see them squirm and just like totally fail. And so we try to make our games have a be able to function even if you're totally outed, basically. With Salem, that's less of the case. That's pretty pure, like you're trying to find the witches. But from Tortuga onwards, if you reveal like who you are or what you have, the game still functions fine. We actually, when we test, we try modes where you flip your loyalty cards face up, or you just kind of play everything face up and make sure that it still functions and that it's still fun. And so that's kind of been, I think, becoming the trademark of the Dark Cities games, is that it's social deduction and lying is only one piece of being a successful player at that game. Like, usually if you're good at lying, you're going to do better, but you're not necessarily going to do the best, because there's a lot of kind of underlying strategy that you can figure out too. So that's been fun.
So you've spoken about the Dark City series itself, and it's been a massive success for Side Games and for you guys on a personal level. We know that there's now a Kickstarter live right now of Hollywood 1947, which is doing amazing. I'm very looking forward to playing it. I know that one of our co-hosts is actually playing it at CanCon right now, like probably right this very second, potentially. And is that the end of the Dark City series, or is there more to come, or is there a different set of books in a different world? Like, I don't know. So I'd like to know if it's the end, and I'd also like to love to know a bit more about Hollywood 1947 and the inspiration behind that.
Yeah. No, it is not the end. So this is our fifth one. We're working hard on number six right now. The rules are actually pretty far along, and it's really fun. And then number seven is sort of in the works as well. So there will at least be seven. In my mind, I like the number 12. There could be 12 of them. I think I'd probably stop at 12. Maybe before then, like if the ideas stop coming, then we won't push it. But I've kind of always imagined 12 of those. And then in terms of Hollywood, do you want me to jump into that?
I know that you have a big sort of, we do a thing on our podcast called Swear an Oath, right? Where we swear an oath to complete a challenge, board game related, usually, not always, but 99% of the time it's supposed to be. I know for a fact that you have a personal oath of to watching all of the Oscar nominated movies.
Yes.
I do have an oath doing that. So I was interested as well in the fact that, did you pick 1947 because there's a movie in that nomination list that you love that much, that's what linked you to that year? Or
that
is there
a
another
good
reason?
Question. That's a great question. We actually picked it because, kind of looking back at the history of kind of the Red Scare, McCarthyism, that kind of felt like a climax of it. In I think it was September 1947, ten of these major screenwriters mostly got called into Congress to testify, to basically say that they weren't communist. I think they just wouldn't say anything, and they threw him in jail for a year. So that was kind of the climax of it, which is why we focused on that. And I think I just liked the sound of 1947 for some reason. Fair play. Like 1948, I didn't love. 49 could have happened, but yeah, that's why we narrowed on that. But there were a lot of good movies right around then, for sure.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about Hollywood 1947?
Yeah. So in this game, you have a loyalty to either the Patriots or the Communists, or there's also a third kind of single role called the Rising Star. So everyone has a loyalty card. You also have a hand of cards, that are, we call them propaganda cards. And during the game, there will be opportunities to slip those cards into a movie, basically. And the Patriot team is trying to make four Patriot movies with mostly Patriot symbols, and communists making four of those. On your turn, everyone has a job. So there's someone might be the screenwriter or the editor or the actor or the producer, cinematographer, composer. And on your turn, you can do your job, and it's unique to the game. So for example, the screenwriter, they'll usually have the first turn. They get to draw two movie posters and pick one to be active for the round. So some posters might kind of help a certain team in a way. So if you're working on a musical, it's going to be a kind of built-in plus two for the Patriots, basically. So that's the screenwriter. Some of the jobs help you get better cards. So for example, the cinematographer lets any player discard their hand of cards and get three new ones. Another job, for example, the composer, they get to draw two cards from the deck and then pick one to go straight into the movie. So those jobs are going on. Everyone also has a die in front of them that's either a blank or a star. And on your turn, if you don't want to do your job, you can roll two dice. Usually you'll try to get people you trust into the movie by getting them a star, and people you don't trust, try to get them out. At the end of the round, so once everyone's had a turn, anyone who has a star gets to play a card into the center. Those all get shuffled. One gets added from the deck to kind of add some doubt and some randomness to it. They get shuffled. One gets taken out. If there's an editor, they kind of have some influence there on which card gets taken out. And they get shuffled again and revealed. And the team with the most symbols wins that round. Then the Rising Star, they're trying to play both sides and get it to a seventh round. And then in that seventh round, make it as close to a tie as they can. So that's the nutshell. So it's really pretty simple. You know, if you have a star, you play. If you don't, you don't. And then the jobs are all about, you know, getting better cards in your hands or influencing who's playing. I'd say mechanically it's probably our second simplest game next to Salem, but I think because of that, it just works really well. Like, people can jump in really fast and really get to the meat of it, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'm biased, remember, but I like it.
Yeah, well, it sounds awesome, because I remember Jules, who's playtesting it at or showing it at CanCon, he was explaining to me that this upcoming game, the Hollywood 1947, and I was, because I, when he said, oh, it's set in Hollywood, I was like, oh, okay, like, what's going to be happening? And then he said, oh, it's set in the McCarthyism era. I was like, oh, that is perfect, like the intrigue and like not knowing and weren't they communists, all that type of stuff, and the amount of, as you know, living over there and probably talking to people, the amount of, you know, fear that this was creating at the time was just perfect. Yeah. I thought, oh, that, you know, you think about, like, I you know, with Bristol, you know, no one knew if you were sick or not, you were just getting out of the city. This one here is, well, we need to make this movie, but we don't know if it's going to be propaganda, if it's going to, or either way, like, it's very, very clever. I'm super impressed.
Thank you. Yeah. The theme, we have loved working on this theme and diving into that history. Initially when we were testing this game, it was going to be a mob mafia type of game where there was a boss handing down cards to his lieutenants. They hand cards down to the soldiers anyways. And it was like fun and it was working okay, but I was just like, yeah, there's just something missing. And then I think it was during the Bristol campaign, someone wrote a comment on the page like, you should do 1940s Hollywood McCarthy's. And I'm like, oh shoot, like, that's totally what this should be. And so we switched everything over, and it, you know, went lots of revisions since then. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it's just such a interesting time of history, you know. And I kind of drew the parallel to Salem a second ago. Like, it's kind of like the Salem witch trials that time period. It's been so fun to work on, and kind of like you were mentioning earlier, you know, I have this goal to watch every Oscar nominated film, so for Best Picture. So it's like 5 to 10 films per year since 1929. So it's a lot.
But it's a big list, mate. That's a lot of challenge.
Like 500 something movies. But yeah. So I'm kind of in that mindset a lot, having watched those old movies, and it has just been so fun to do that, and you know, make the design kind of around that stuff, and make allusions to some of those early films. Yeah.
Every year that goes by that you don't watch five, you're getting in a bigger list.
Exponential growth. Yeah.
So scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good warning for us, though, Connor. Never do an oath like that where we're then tied in for like generations, because yeah, we would fail hard.
Yeah, I'm gonna play like every new magic block. It's like every magic block. It's like there's gonna be another three each year. Yeah,
the winner actually of Best Picture that year was The Gentleman's Agreement in 1947. And I haven't seen the film, but reading the synopsis, it sounds like a very intriguing film that I would definitely like to watch. So.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that one.
I have not seen that one yet.
No. It sounds really interesting.
You have me interested. Which ones came out that year?
Well,
I only saw the winner.
All I want to know is if the communists or the patriots made that film. That's all I want to know. Who made that film?
Oh, okay. Well, so 1947 Oscars looks like It's a Wonderful Life. So, I mean, that's classic right there.
Yeah.
The Best Years of Our Lives is a good one. That one's, it's like a bunch of World War II vets kind of adjusting to home. It was really good. The Razor's Edge, I don't think I've seen that one yet. Anyways, I digress.
No,
it's all good.
Welcome to a podcast with Connor and Adrian digressing. Like
you're lucky we haven't mentioned Transformers or anything.
Well, yet, check out my shirt.
See.
Speaking of Oscar nominated films, the 1987 maybe
six.
86 Transformers, the animated film. Missed out. No, I'm kidding. I'm very much. we've actually got on our Discord, Travis. We've got a film and TV sort of like a channel. So feel free to jump in there and give us updates of the That'd film and what's been going on. Like that would be so cool. People would love it.
Nice.
They'd really love that. But I have one more. Well, I've got one more question to ask. And there's talk of a Google Drive folder called the Island of Misfit Games. The legend of the Island of Misfit Games. Are any of these games going to see the light of day?
Oh man. Yes. So for reference, this is when we develop a game, maybe it's like 20, 30 versions in, and it's just not going anywhere. I keep trying to fix it, but it just doesn't want to be fixed. Goes to that folder. I think there's like a San Francisco Gold Rush game in there. There's a lot of offshoots of Deadwood in there. Deadwood we could just not figure out. So there's a lot of cowboy games in that folder. There's a lot of ancient Rome games in there. Pieces of them will usually see the light of day again. Sometimes when I'm stuck in the early bits, I'll just pull out, version 27 of random game and just kind of read through my old rules and look through the old cards and be like, I really liked this part of it. Let's throw this into this game and see how it works. So pieces of it come back, but often, I've made so many versions of games in my life now, like thousands, that a lot of times it's just good to start fresh and just like I need a clean slate. Because like just to remember like the train of thought you were going down 5 years ago, it's like I don't know where I was going with
that,
this.
That must be fascinating too, like to come back and be like, hang on, what was this supposed to be originally? Like I've totally lost tact of where I was supposed to be going with this.
Yeah, totally. There's one game too. It was so after we made Salem, I was randomly, like, I wasn't quite on the Dark Cities train yet. And I was like, well, like, maybe I'll make a basketball themed game, which kind of random sounded, but I'm into like fantasy football and all that. But we made this basketball game and where you're basically managing a team and you can like tank your team to get a better draft pick. And anyways, it's like really fun. Like, I really like it. And a lot of my brothers, they're like, we just want to play that basketball game. Like, whenever they get together, they're like, you got to publish it. You got to do something with this. And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't really fit with our kind of our brand now. And, and I've tried to retheme it, but it just like doesn't really work when it's not a sports game. And then I get to thinking like, are there any like really successful sports board games? Like, I kind of feel like board gamers are like not the sportiest crowd anyways.
Yeah. So, yeah. We've talked about that a little bit. Like, there's a bit of crossover. Like, I love my sport. Like, I am an absolute sport nuffy. And we've actually talked about like there should be a basketball game, like a proper sort of like whether it's like the management of the team or because I think that fascinates people a little bit more than, you know, you can go out and play, like you can go out and shoot hoops, whatever, but you can't really manage a team outside of doing fantasy football, fantasy basketball. Like, it doesn't happen. Like, I can't just go out and buy a team. That's not how it works. So something like that, I think there'd be a little bit of interest for that. And I think there's a few games that are trying to do it. But, yeah, hey, I'd be down. I'd be down to try that game for sure.
I think half of the podcast crew like basketball.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, there's three or four of you guys that all love basketball. I don't even like sport just at all. But I can see the appeal of a management game as a board game format because it is kind of crunching numbers and, you know, arranging to get your best team, and it would work on the table, I think, better than, say, Sabudio, like the soccer game. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is an action-y kind of physical thing. Yeah, like, I think the management side of it could really work. So,
yeah. Well, that's encouraging. Yeah, I think that will see the light of day someday. I've toyed with just like selling it to another company to do just cause we're doing other games, but that's kind of one in that folder that it's like just kind of waiting. But yeah, thanks for the encouragement on that one, I guess.
And I've got to say, so Dayton, Ohio, are you Cincinnati Bengals?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they got a big game tomorrow. Is it? Are you gonna?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Against the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, we'll be fine. Yeah, we got it.
You got it.
If you're doing.
Not worried.
I hope as a Patriots fan, I hope you smash the Bills big time. Just put them back in their place. Yeah.
Do it for favor. Yeah.
If you needed to keep it in the Dark Cities thing genre, you could do Michigan 2004.
Oh.
Because
Fab Five. You know,
well, isn't that like the Malice in the Palace when there was the big riot?
Yeah.
At least that's keeping it dark. Like, that's a dark time for basketball.
That's true.
That's my only sports reference you'll get out of me for the rest of my life.
Who's going to draft Ron Artest? That's who we need to know. that's Adrian, that is the deepest of deep cuts in terms of a sports reference for me. I hope you're honored, Travis, because I'm impressed with Adrian.
I watched that documentary. Yep. It was really good.
Yeah, I know.
I really enjoyed it, so.
Now, good.
We might just move on to a couple of Patreon questions, if that's okay, Travis, before we talk about some of our games that we've been playing mostly this week. There's actually a couple of them are really, really great. I'll mention this first one here from Ben, Patreon member. He says, no question, just a huge thanks for some of the best gaming memories of 2022.
Wow. Thank you.
And also, I just want to let everyone know that Ben is the person that ousted me out on Discord about my zipline breaking incident. So me and him have no trust in each other because anytime we play any social deduction games, it's basically him shouting and swearing at me and then me laughing or vice versa, me shouting and swearing at him and him laughing at me. So that's a good relationship.
That's because whenever Ben goes over to play games with you, he has an earpiece that's got me talking into it and telling him all the things that he should be doing.
I do.
No, he's very good. I've got one from our friend from our friend JB, and he wants to know, why do people kick me out of the winning cart in Bristol when there's 0% chance that I'm infected because I didn't have a mingle?
Oh, man. I don't know. That's they shouldn't be doing that, really. Because, yeah, if you don't mingle, you don't have the plague. So they must just have something against you. Sorry.
That sounds right. That sounds about right, dude.
The correct answer is get better friends. I think that's what you should be doing. Yeah. From a more design type of thing. So Jace asks, well, you've sort of said your vision for Facade Games, and what's the idea behind Game for Thursdays?
Yes. These little party games we're working on. The first one was trophies. Yep. I don't know if you guys have you guys played that by chance?
No, I haven't. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and just really simple. So I gave you kind of the background of my family. You know, lots of kids, big gamers. Holly's family, they're more of like the Uno, Skip-Bo kind of crowd, kind of that attention span for games, and so. Our party line is kind of for them and kind of that type. We just want to jump in really quick, very very few rules, just fun. So trophies is our first one there. Our next one in that series is going to come out next year. It's called Parkade. I've learned a Canadian word for a parking garage. That's what I've learned.
Okay.
And we just kind of like the sound of the word. It was cool. Parkade. Yeah. But again, it's just really fast. It's like a word association thing where there's parking spot cards on the table with words on them. And then you have a hand of like five cars you have to park. And you're just trying to convince the judge like why your word matches with one of the words. Oh,
great.
On the parking spot. It's like a real-time thing, just really crazy. Just kind of trying to channel that like parking anger stuff. So we have... We have that coming out. We're trying to get into a schedule where we do every other year a party game and a Dark Cities game. So that'll be next year. And then we have kind of one in the hopper for 3 years from now as well.
Nice.
But kind of the first one, trophies, kind of the subtitle is a game for Thursdays. I think this next one we're gonna call it a game for Fridays, subtitle, and we'll just go through all the days of the week. So
nice.
Is a game for Mondays like going to be really blue and depressive?
Probably, yeah.
Timesheets, the board game.
The board game. Yeah.
We also have a question here from Jonathan, and he asked, how do you manage to make games which play so well at large play accounts without them coming too chaotic or without too much downtime and without the balance?
Yeah. Lots of testing. You know, whenever we test, especially with, you know, 7, 8, 9 player games, I'll look around, and really the tell is if people pull out their phones and are just like looking at their phone between turns, I'm like, okay, something's wrong. Just trying to find the ways to keep people engaged. So part of that is, you know, quick turns. So we try to make each person's turn, like not have too many decisions. It's like you have two choices basically, or you have maybe three choices that are just really quick. Not a lot of like two-step things where it's like, okay, you can do two things on your turn. We just make it one thing. You draw a card, your turn's over. You play a card, your turn's over. So that it gets around to the table quick. And then we also try to make each turn involve other players as much as we can. So for example, with Hollywood, it's like you get to roll two dice. So you're not just focused on your dice. You're going to roll someone else too. So they're probably being like, hey, roll my dice. Or like, no, roll this guy's dice. So it's very much like trying to talk people into doing stuff. And then another example is like with Deadwood, you're stealing people's safes. And there's a card you can play out of turn to like help someone in a fight. So if you have a holster card, you can kind of play that out of turns. That again, just trying to keep people engaged the whole time. So that's a big part of it. Quick turns, keeping people engaged. And then, you know, the other thing we're looking for in playtest is how much people like scream, like out of anger or surprise or like shock or betrayal. So to do that, we try to just really make people feel like they are in the game. Like, you know, like I am the person in this little cart trying to get out of town. Or like I am this guy in this little establishment trying to get this thing. I am this pirate on the ship. And so just to feel like, okay, this is me here. And when someone does something to me that's harmful, like I'm invested.
Yeah.
I'm mad.
100%. Like I've only ever played Bristol at 9 players because for me, I just think that everybody having their own pawn and the thing being completely filled really adds, like elevates that game for me personally, because I always like the green. I always pick green as my favorite color. I always go green. Yeah, man, my man. And I always have the green one, and I'm always really vigilant about where I am, what I'm doing, because I feel like I am that person in that cart and checking everybody else around me. And as soon as I find out there's some scumbag in my cart that I don't like, I'm like, we got to get out of here. Me and my pawn, we need to move now. Yes. And I love that feeling of it being that full. And yeah, it's fantastic.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we might, if you happy to hang around, Travis, we might chat about some of the games we've been playing the last week or so. For me, it's more like the last 2 months because I actually haven't been on for a really long time. Because we did like an end of year wrap up, we did our top 10 games of all time for this year. So that was quite cool. But AD, why don't you lead us off with what's been hitting the table for you, dude?
Well, I played a bunch of games recently, and I'll give Travis a tiny bit of background in this. My mum is visiting from the UK, having never played board games before, only Scrabble, Monopoly, you know, the normal games that we all grew up with in the 80s and stuff. And when she got here, she obviously was massively intrigued in the collection, and I'd never really, because I left England years and years ago, I've never really played any board games with my mum at all. And I am massively into this hobby at the moment, and I absolutely love board games. So it's been really nice to share some of the bigger, more complicated Euros that I really like with my mum. And she's someone that really wants to do the thing that I'm doing, if you know what I mean. Like, she wouldn't want me to go, oh, look, we're just going to play this little game just because it's easy and quick and that's it. She wants to play what I like so she can experience that. So we've been playing a lot of Pipeline, a lot of Teotihuacan, a lot of On Mars. And I had suggestions from the listeners. And also I got a message from Ian himself, because my mum likes sewing. She does dressmaking and things like that. And everybody has said, you've got to get your mum to play Rococo. I've had a few people reach out and say, I've got a copy of Rococo. Come and pick it up. Show your mum. She'll love it. If she likes those kind of heavier, interesting Euro games, but also like the dressmaking, this is like the perfect game. Well, luckily enough, my Kickstarter arrived for Weather Machine, I believe, and I'd added Rococo to that months ago. And it just so happens that she was here when it arrived, and we all sat down and learned Rococo together, me, my partner MJ, and my mum. And I loved it. It blew me out of the water, to be honest. It's funny because a lot of people say, oh, it's, you know, it's not as heavy as some of the other games that you might like that are made by Eagle Griffin Games, but it's still a good game and stuff. But I thought they're really good at doing simple actions, but very deep thought and very complicated to combine moves together. And yeah, I really enjoyed Rococo. My mum loved Rococo. It's kind of funny though, because I still don't say make a dress or sew a dress. I keep saying, I'm going to build a dress because I'm always used to building a building, adding an advanced complex. So it's something that I need to try and get out of my system. But yeah, Rococo is essentially a game that's set in the 17th century, and you are, not going to say building, I'm going to struggle here. You are making dresses.
Go on, for say building a ball, dress.
Building a dress, there we go. And it's another one of those games where it's really interesting actions that can really combo into each other but it's not overly complicated. Like, we learned it from the rule book pretty quickly. As soon as we'd done one round, it was game on. Like, we all understood what we were doing. It was very simple, but really, really fun. And it's like almost got like this deck builder mechanic with your actions, because essentially you can employ more people, and the people that you're employing are your actions, but you also can sack some of your workers to get cards and swap cards out and get rid of dud cards that are sort of bloating your deck up a little bit. Because there's only like seven rounds, you don't get a lot of time to do that. And certain workers can take certain actions, and masters can take, you know, all of the actions. But it was an incredibly tight game as well. Like, it went for like 2.5 hours, bearing in mind that it was a learn as we played kind of a game. So I could see that time being cut down to easy like 1.5 hours. But it ended on 60 victory points, 57 victory points, 55 victory points. So for a game that goes on that long, it was nice to be that close. But yeah, I mean, this is only a first impressions of this game. I've actually left it on the table today because I intend to go and play it as soon as we finish this. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved the actions. I loved the taking the dresses. And it has that thing in it that a lot of these kind of games have in them, where it's really important to be the first player. Like, especially coming into like the 5th, 6th, 7th round, like, you really don't want people to take the stuff that you're trying to achieve or build. Because if they do, then you're on the back foot, and then you've got to try and mitigate and catch up somehow. And basically, most of the actions are very simple. It's hire another worker, which gets you another card. It's decorate the halls and put tokens out on the board, which cost money to decorate, and you get victory points at the end of the game. It's gather resources, which is any of the colors of silk. There's 4 colors, and or a thread or a lace. And then the other one is just essentially make a dress. And actually, as you've got the resources in your little selection, in your little hidden, because you actually hide what resources you have from each player, so they can't look at your stuff and go, oh, sweet, well, I'm going to steal that dress from that person because I know that's the only dress they can make. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it as a first impression. I absolutely loved the look of it, loved the style, loved the art. I'm trying not to say build dresses more. That's going to be my improvement
for the next game. Is that going
to be your oath? My oath is to say not build dresses in the next game of Rococo. But like, yeah, it was really interesting. And there's a really interesting mechanic in the end game scoring as well, which really, I didn't realize how important that was until it was too late. I was like, oh dear. Like, because essentially you can make the dresses and you can put them into different rooms in this palace. And if you put them in like the royal ballroom at the top, at the end of the game, you, as long as you've decorated the fireworks display, you can slide those dresses up and then they get like a double point or a triple point combo. Well, I'd snagged the triple points, but unfortunately my only dress in that area was worth 2.
Yeah, right.
So I was only getting 6 points, but you know, my mom and MJ had 3 points times 2, but they had a couple of dresses in there, so they actually got more points than I did for that area. But yeah, it's a lovely looking game. If you have any interest in not even just sewing or dressmaking, but just a good sort of action deck buildery Euro, it's just, yeah, I think you'd love it. So yeah, I'm going to play it more, and I'll get back to people once I've played it a few more times and see how deep it can go, because there is a little bit of random setup, which I think adds a lot of replayability to a game. Like, as an example, like Pipeline and Barrage and stuff with all their randoming setups is the reason why I feel that those games are so replayable. Whereas this one, it has a little bit of that. The dresses that come out at the start are all different. The cards that come out could be different at the start. So I think they could combo into each other and you could get some really interesting actions that you might not have had in a previous game. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. I'm really glad that I got it. And I can't wait to play it some more and see what my mum thinks of it in the long term. Yeah, you know, so.
For sure. Have you played Rococo or heard about Rococo, Travis?
I have not played it. I may have heard of it. I'm not sure if I have or not. But it sounds great. I mean, what you're talking about with the simple actions and, but, you know, some good depth to them. And I'm curious to look more at what it looks like, because I mean that's a cool description, and yeah, got me intrigued.
Yeah. We'll definitely look it up when we finish this, because it is very, it's very good. It's a very good looking game, but it's Ian O'Toole. Like, he does, you know, phenomenal work, and he's very diverse work. Like, you look at Kanban compared to Lisboa,
yeah.
And they're like so different, but they fit those themes so perfectly. Like, that's just, yeah, that's just where the design, the graphic design and artist melded together. Yeah, it just works really well. So,
Who does the graphic design for you guys? Is it Holly that does the graphic design?
It is Holly.
Yeah. And have you found that's sort of something? Was that when I first started getting into board games? I wouldn't have taken that on board how important the graphic design is. Were you a bit the same when you started designing games?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with our first game, you know, we looked around for an illustrator. We found an illustrator. And she like sent back the illustrations. I was like, okay, cool. Now, like, what about like the borders and the fonts and put it all together? And she's like, like, I'm an illustrator. Like, I draw the pictures. Like, oh shoot. And then Holly kind of stepped in, like, oh, like, I think I can figure that out. And she did. And she's gotten better and better. But yeah, I mean, graphic designers are huge. Like, they're the gatekeepers for just getting it all together and really bringing it all home. So yeah, it's big.
Yeah. Travis, is there a game that you wanted to talk about, or have you just been flat out with your own games? Or
yeah, I mean, over break, we were working on some like some final deluxe cards and posters, kind of expansions type of stuff for Hollywood. So I just played that over and over again.
Yeah,
and then lots of our volume six. Been doing a lot of that one it's gonna be like a non-apologetic elimination game. Like,
yep,
it's straight up, you're whittling down. We're trying to make it go quick enough that if you're out first, like, you're okay, because it's gonna end quick, and we're trying to still keep it really interesting for the people who get out still anyways. But doing a lot of that. I did play Chameleon the other day. That's fun. I mean, just, you know, really simple and just a solid little game. So we enjoyed that.
Probably like a good one around sort of the holiday time, where if you guys are busy, you know, you've got enough rules and explanations in your brain for yourselves that you can have a game like that. It's just snappy and quick and really easy to play. Yeah, for sure. Well, I might talk about a game that I can't remember if I've sizzled this game or not. I feel like I have, but it's Unfair by Good Games. With Unfair, what you're doing is you're trying to create the, I wouldn't say perfect theme park. I'd say passable. It does its job. And the reason why it does its job is because there's a fair bit of take that and some unfortunate events that can come up. So the way the game's structured, it's structured over 8 rounds. And in each of the round, what you do is you take some pretty simple actions. So that might be playing a card into your park, so building an attraction or hiring a staff member. But you can also go and grab blueprints, which are missions, which you get deducted points from if you don't complete them. So there's a bit of a risk. You can also just go and grab the spare change around your park. So you go and grab a coin from each of your, you know, they've dropped out of, you know, someone's dropped it on the ground. So you get a dollar from visiting them. Or you can go through and grab something out of the event deck. And I think the event deck, this is what I think turned some people off, but what I think is really great. Because what can start to happen is someone can have these really incredible attractions that just get more and more and more money. And then they're sort of left going, oh, how can I combat this? Because in the end, you want to have the most points, the best attractions. And the attractions also get you money. So what you can do during the event step is you can perhaps create an injunction against that person. So they have to shut that ride down. Maybe, you know, it's not up to safety code. Or there might be an event where there's a bit of food poisoning. So all the food stalls around the park get shut down. So this person might have had this really popular food stall and it gets shut down. I just think it's really, really clever. We were playing it at my niece has been over for the last week. And we sort of said, okay, what's a game we haven't played for a while, but my partner, Hannah, knows how to play. My sister's played with me a few times. And we thought, right, we'll play Unfair. And it finished, and my niece goes, I want to play this game again. So we're partway through a game because we started a bit late last night. So we're at the halfway point. And the halfway point is where the good city events finish. So it's like, you know, you've had a boom, you get to sell the premium ticket, so you get twice as many people through your park. Maybe you have, I'm trying to think what else is going on. Oh, it's senior day. So the leisure rides earn 5 extra coins because they don't want to go on the big fancy, you know, loop-de-loop sort of crazy rides. They just want to go on the Tiger Tour or, you know, the riverboat cruise or something like that. So when it's senior day, they sort of accrue a bit more. But now we've gotten to the point where the bad events are starting. So, you know, the outbreak of food poisoning. We had one that came up where there was a sewage malfunction. So all the rides that had restrooms had to shut down because the plumbing was all broken, all that type of stuff. Now, this might turn some people off. However, those event cards that I was talking about, you can get event cards that block those events. So you might block an event that's being played on you. So it's really important that you accrue some of those cards. Now, we've played this game a fair few times. I'd say about 10 times. And this won't surprise Adrian a bit. But I was reading the rules and I thought, oh, lots of people are getting event cards. I don't like – this seems cool, but it kind of feels like you can just get all these event cards. And I read, and there's actually a hand limit, not just for your park cards, but also your event cards, and it's combined. So I sort of was partway through it. And I sort of like slowly turned everyone else. Oh my God, guys, we've made a massive mistake here. And my sister Megan goes, yeah, I kind of felt like I was breaking the rules a little bit with all these event cards I was having. So I was like, oh my God. So we just said, look, we'll play it through. We'll just play it the way we've been playing it. But next. And I think now that I've read that, it actually balances the game out a whole lot more. Because they now have to make a decision. Do I want these really powerful, I say powerful, like, you know, in terms of the game, these event cards, or do I want to have these really cool attractions in my hand that I can build? Now, what I think sets this game apart from a lot of the other games, what makes it super thematic, is that, obviously, what do great theme parks have? Like, what do they have?
80. Rides.
Rides, okay. So, AD, what's like themes. Your favorite themes? Yeah, that's right. And there's for each player in the game, you put in a different theme. So the base game comes with like jungle, robot, pirate, gangster, and ninja.
Yes, that's it.
And I've got the first expansion that comes with aliens, westerns, dinosaurs, and B-movie. So, Adrian, the B-movie one will be right up your alley. And each of them comes with their own kind of mini set of rules. So the one that's the biggest change is actually, you know, Adrian, how you can get the panoramas? Do you know how you can do that?
Yes. Yeah.
So what you can do, Travis, is some of the cards have like a panorama that if you link them up, they actually like form a bigger panorama. It's really, really cool. And in the base game, they say, oh, like you don't need to worry about that. It's just something cool. Well, the B movie, because they want it to be as crazy and extravagant as possible, you actually get panorama scoring. So only if you put that theme in, and the cool thing about the B-movie is there's lots of those opportunities. And you can even build in like a billboard. So it's like, I don't have that card yet, but I'm going to put in a billboard as a coming attraction. And then when I want to build, I just demolish it and put the attraction in. It's great. I mean, my favorite, you're talking about Jurassic Park before, 80. The dinosaur one's fantastic because it's
That's my favorite part of the game is that everyone gets to pick a deck that they like. I don't know if that's in the rules, but that's what we do. Yeah, I just go, I want the robot one. And then someone else picks the next. We do it in like a, you know, reverse turn order. And then you just mash all of those different themes together, and then you might end up with like a Western ride with a robot toilet. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just really funny.
With a vending machine attached to it. But like things like you can't put a vending machine with a food stall because why would you do that? You're not going to do that. There's one, I think it's for the B-movie, so you can like give your ride certifications. The B movie has, instead of like superior, like deluxe quality, it's just got acceptable quality. And that's it. It can't have any more. Like, it's just acceptable quality of a movie. Because, you know, B movies are sort of, you know, typically trash, hokey. All that stuff, hokey, yeah. Oh, it's so much fun. I forgot how much fun it was. We really don't play that much of the take that, but it can be really take that-y. But I think that's part of the fun. Like, you just have to build into it and be like, okay, am I going to try and block that? Hannah got a cool card. So, AD, this is a cool card. Where you can look into the future. So like the city deck, so for the good cards, you can start to build it up so you can take the benefit of the city deck. And the bad ones, you can start to prepare for it. And I was like, oh, that is super, super powerful. Yeah, it's great fun. It is so thematic. I forgot how much fun it was. And it was actually one of my first Kickstarters that I backed, actually. That's kind of how.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so they're going to do, for each letter of the alphabet, they're going to have an expansion. So I think the one that's that's coming soon is Ocean, Kaiju, Super
Zombies,
Hero, and I think maybe Zombies, yeah. I mean, Zombies are definitely coming, so. Like that's no doubt. But yeah, that's unfair if you're into sort of a theme building. It can run a little bit long. That's probably my only criticism, but there is a game mode where you can cut out the last two. It's called First Date, and you can cut out the last two of the bad events, so you sort of have a majority of good ones. But, yeah, great game. I would play this game in a heartbeat. It's a lot of fun. In fact, like you said about Rococo, it's set up on my table right now. So when I finish this, we'll probably jump in and play it. But, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, just before we move on to our question of the pod, just a couple of announcements. Adrian, lead us off.
We have the Melbourne Game Day coming up in Melbourne. Like, please go check out the Eventbrite page. We don't have many tickets left for that currently, so that will eventually, come to sit out. And that's not very far away, couple of weeks away, and it's in. And also, there's an announcement, I believe, from Sydney is to not make any plans for Easter weekend because they have a big plan in the works. So please check out our Eventbrite page, please. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's good. Excellent, excellent stuff. Okay, so we might get on to our question of the pod.
You know, as a podcaster, it's quite difficult sometimes. You try and do an impromptu ad to get a little bit of a vibe going when you're recording, and the two people recording with you are completely brainless and don't pick up on your subtle clues. Have you ever had that happen, Adrian?
Well, I would have, but I was too busy shopping at adventgames.com.au.
Adventgames.com.au, they apparently have an absolutely amazing range of games to choose from.
They definitely do. I've actually bought a bunch of stuff from there, especially over the Christmas period. It's always really good service as well. Like, you can always message Advent and they will give you replies back pretty much straight away. Dean's an absolute great guy. He does community building stuff in Sydney. See him at game days.
Sorry, I'm late, guys. I was just on my phone reading the latest newsletter from Advent Games. What are you guys talking about?
Well, funnily enough, we're talking about adventgames.com.au. They always are the first to have really good pre-orders available. Wondering about thinking, I want to get that game when it comes to Australia, head over to adventgames.com.au. You can almost be certain that they'll have a pre-order option there. You can lock it in and know that you'll be one of the first to get it as soon as it's available.
All right. What was that? We'll start again. I'm going to head over there right now.
It's www.adventgames.com.au.
I'm on there now. Done.
This is actually quite cool because the question was, Travis, what's your fondest memory playing games with your family? Which is great because that's sort of how you let off our sort of our chat. So, I mean, do you have one in particular that's your fondest? Your ultimate lie that you had in Werewolf?
Oh, man. It's so hard to pick one with Werewolf. I'll bring up another one. Just for fun too. So every Christmas Eve, all my siblings, we would pile into the basement, I guess. Go to the basement.
Get down there, kid. Get down there. Leave the adults alone. Yeah.
And kind of just for laughs, we would play this game called Outburst Junior. Have you guys ever played Outburst or heard of it?
Nice.
It might be like a
it's very old. I mean, the copy we had had to have been made in the mid 80s or something. Basically you just, you list a top, there's two teams, you list a topic like, ice cream flavors or something.
Yeah.
And there's 10 on the card. You got to check them off. So we'd play with the two teams and some would be very easy. Like it'd be like literally like colors of the rainbow or like fruits. But then every so often you'd get like characters in the 1981 sitcom, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, I don't know. And so the one team that got that card, they would get 0 points that round and just be like, what? Come on. Like, that's not fair. The other team was just laughing at him. And we still to this day will just pull it out and one team will just get hosed because they have no idea. And I just remember lots of fun times on those Christmas Eves doing that. So.
We had this Disney trivia box and it was cool because it had kids cards and then adult cards. And the kids cards were pretty straightforward, right? Like it was like, who is this character? What movie are they from? Who is this sidekick? Blah, 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 blah. And it was Trivial Pursuit, sorry. So you had the different categories.
Okay.
Then the adult ones, they were wild. Like there was no way you could get them unless you had the most in-depth knowledge of Disney. It's like in Magical Kingdom, in the ride, the something or other, what was at the end of the third turn? And we're just going, like, what? Like, how are we supposed to know this? And like all these, and because like I guess Disney, like at the time Disney owned, like maybe, I don't know if they owned Paramount or whatever, but they had like subset film companies. They used them. So it wasn't even like a Disney film. Oh, it was like something stupid. It was like, oh, what is that? How are we supposed to know this? But it was the same thing. And then you would be like, who's the main character? Oh, who did Robert Williams voice in the 1995 movie Aladdin? It's like, what? You get that. And I have like, I need to know the architecture of the ride in Magic Kingdom. But that's really fun. I'm a bit like you, Travis. My family are massive gamers. Like we've played games and it's really, really hard to find one. But I think one of my fondest memories, and I've talked about this a couple of times, and it's a bit more recent, is that when my dad was still around, we got him to play Quacks of Quedlinburg. And I don't know if you ever played it, Travis, but there's a point in Quacks where you're going in, you're taking tokens out of your bag, and eventually there might be a point where your cauldron bursts. So it's a push your luck type thing. Adrian knows this all too well. And we got this video of my old man, and we're egging him on, going, "Go, you know, there's no chance you can get that last one that's going to burst." And he's like, and in the video that we have, it's sort of we're doing the oh, like anytime he goes in the bag and then draws it out, it's like, and then he's like, oh, and he's sort of making these noises, and then the last one, he like he draws it out, and it's like the token that makes him burst, and he like just throws everything everywhere, he's like ah, where I just. Absolutely having a laugh at him, and it was just really good, like, so because he's not around anymore, so it was a really nice memory for me to have of such a great game. But yeah, like we've had memories of playing like week-long games of Talisman, or you know, the Monopoly game where like someone just like makes a stand, or like in Risk, I don't know if you've played Risk, but like you had that one person who can like fight off hordes and hordes because they just keep rolling a six. Yeah, that's memories like that are fantastic. What about you, AD?
Oh man, like memories from my childhood playing games would definitely be either Scrabble with my mum, or we went and lived with my uncle for a little while with my mum and everybody and stayed there for a bit. And we used to play those Monopoly games over Christmas because in the UK it's freezing, dude. Like it's so cold at home and over Christmas. So everyone's just inside stuck. It's dark at 3 p.m. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not the same as out here. We used to play Monopoly, and the Monopoly games, they go for days. Hey, like, how did that happen?
Because
I don't understand that. Like, how was my attention span that good back then when I was like 8 or 9? Like, whereas now I wouldn't stand for that at all. But I remember playing Monopoly, and I've spoken about this once a long time ago on a podcast when we were talking to Matt Leacock, and my uncle he'd go to the shops, he'd buy a bunch of lollies and bring them out, and he'd be like, I'll give you a packet of polos for Old Kent Road. And my auntie would be going off. She'd be like, that's cheating. You can't do that. Oh, and he's like, it's a cruel, dark world out there. And the sooner these kids learn it, the better. And like, he's like, and you know, we're kids. We're like, I don't want this piece of paper. Give me them lollies. Yeah. And we'd swap them in a heartbeat. So yeah, I remember that being pretty cool. And most recently, you know, playing things like On Mars with my mum.
Yeah, like, that's awesome. That's so cool.
Pretty sick. Like losing On Mars to my mum is another way of saying it as well.
When you when you put that post up, because I've had that experience of trying to teach my mum like a sort of heavier Euro, and it did not go down very well. So when I saw that, you know, and how invested she was, and that picture, Travis, Adrian showed us his picture of his mum sort of sitting there with her hands over like her brow, like just in deep thought, trying to work out like the next move. And I was like, that is classic. She is so invested in this.
Yeah. That breaks most people. Yeah, true, that's a terrible one for that. That's really that. But we also had some contributions from some of our community. So on Discord, Hells said, my favorite childhood memory of board gaming is with my grandfather teaching me games like backgammon, Chinese checkers, Ludo, and Mahjong. More recently, it's getting my son and niece hooked on Horrified and Code Words. They have an age, they have a 15-year age gap, which is pretty cool, but it's a special time for me to see them bonding over games. That's pretty cool. 15 years, like that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's 10 years between me and my brother, so it's a bit the same. Like you kind of grow up with them. One of our favorites, Big Nose, he says, as a child, we had a Scrabble set in the burgundy card box with the rules pasted on the inside of the lid. We'd play it fairly often, and I was convinced that we were pretty damn good at this game and I could beat my parents quite often. Then visiting another childhood friend, we, with their parents, decided to crack out their Scrabble set, and I discovered, no, I'm not good at Scrabble. I am very, very bad at Scrabble, and I'm very slow at Scrabble too. A valuable lesson in board games humility. Stick to it for the enjoyment with the people you love, not to try and win. And then we got one from Draven. My favorite board game memory is playing with family, is sitting down as a group to play Detective, a modern crime board game, discussion and theorizing and all the above. The table play in that game was a genuine joy, so spending time with his family. And I have a more vintage memory of my brother receiving Shogun, a.k.a. Samurai Swords, a.k.a. Ikusa, for his 12th birthday. We sat down as a family to play, and my brother was the first one eliminated. He left the table to go and sulk in his room, and the rest of us finished the game. Priceless.
I think I've done that as a kid. I'm sure I've done that. And gone, not playing this anymore, stupid, and just like walking out. On Facebook, we had Dana Davison say, my Italian dad, who passed away over 20 years ago, teaching me Scala and Scorpa, Italian card games. Wish I could have those days back again.
That's always nice. And we got Tegan Smith. When we were kids, my brothers and stepsisters, and I thought I went through a phase in the 90s where we played heaps of HeroQuest, including waking each other up at like 5 a.m. on school days so we could get the game to the table before school. We also crafted a whole bunch of our own made-up monster, treasure, and equipment cards. In hindsight, we completely broke the game. But we had a blast doing it. Yeah, I've heard heaps of stories of people doing stuff like that. It's like, no. Like, I'm sick of there not being – I suppose it's a bit like what you were talking about, Travis. Like, you come up with the game that you want to play. It's like, HeroQuest is silly. It needs more Cyclops in it. So, excellent. Well, we've said our question of the pod for last week. So the new one is, and you touched on it, Travis. So me and Adrian are talking before the show, and you talked about what you want, like the game to make you scream. And I had that happen to me. Playing Bristol at PAX in Melbourne. And in my first turn, I became infected. So I had to sit there the whole game, knowing that I was infected, knowing the only way that I could win is if none of the healthy people left Bristol. So I was just scheming the whole time, and I knew, and I was like, okay, I need to make it. And I don't know if people – I think I ended up getting caught at the end, but by the end it was too late. We had to leave. And the moment that last group left and there was an infected person in that carriage, I screamed. I yelled. Like, it was so loud. And it was like – what time do you reckon it was, Adi? Like 10 o'clock at night?
It was – like 11 o'clock, and it was dead. Like, it was dead quiet. This is a room that holds 80,000 people. There's like everyone's sitting down playing their Euros and a little bit. There's like these guys are playing 9-player Bristol with probably 11 people surrounding them. I was running interference, just pointing at people going, he's sick. Connor's like, shut up, you're not even playing a game. Get away from me. And it was just such a riot. It was insane.
Yeah. So I guess the question we are going to ask ourselves and then the community is, what makes you scream in board games? Now, Travis, you're obviously talking about something positive. Along with me having in fact, it was hardly any of my doing, which is, I think, why I was so like caught up in it, because I was like, I'm definitely being taken along. Yeah, is when you're just, you know, there's one move that you got to make. There's one move that can win you the game, and you're sitting on it for like a turn, and someone just takes that spot from you, and or that card from you, and you're just like, Adrian, I remember we were playing. I think we were playing Seafarers of the South Tigris. Do you remember playing that on Tabletop Simulator?
Yeah.
Jules took my spot. So I muted my microphone and just screamed. I screamed so loud. I just went, and then I was like, no one heard from me for ages. And then I think Adrian or someone was like, Connor, are you still there? And I had to like unmute, but yep, I'm here. So I was like,
You'd forgotten that you'd muted yourself. Like, you were talking.
And then I had to come bring myself back down and then play the rest of the game. So that's what makes me scream in board games.
Cool. Can you also just please pass on to Holly that she inspired our question of the pod this week? We watched her TED talk or review. And that was one of the things that Facade Games, you know, their best metric for progress and stuff. And we were inspired by that. So it's pretty cool.
Nice, yeah.
But, man, like for me, like screaming games, like there's definitely that. And it's more like at the end of the games when I realize the person I thought was screwing me over was actually not screwing me over. And it was the person next to me who was like cool and calm as a cucumber, was just screwing the whole game over. And I'm like, I hate you. And like, I'm actually like, most of the time I'll push them and stuff because I know them pretty well. But yeah, that definitely makes me scream. But internally, I have a massive rivalry with my partner, MJ. We play a lot of like these Euro games and we play them a lot at two player. And I mean, there's been times where I've been broken completely by the game. I'm not gonna lie, like I said that I wouldn't talk about On Mars until I played it 10 times in a row. That was one of my oaths, and I played it 10 times. I won the first game, lost 8 consecutively, and then won the last one. And that's a long game to lose 8 games of. And internally, whenever MJ was putting her piece in a place that I needed to go, I'd just be like, oh, what are you doing that for? Why didn't you go there? I really depended on you not going there and just going here so I can go there. Then I can do this. And then I have to rethink my whole plan. So there's this internal boil up inside me where I get mildly frustrated.
Put it lightly. Yeah.
Lightly. But yeah, that's pretty much it for me. It's screams of winning as well, like as a group, like a team game as well. Like when you're playing something like Pandemic or anything like that and you're playing on hard mode.
Being a death monster.
Kingdom Death was like, oh my lordy, like that. We have like a pretty soundproof room, but MJ like closes all the doors when we play that game because we just roar. It's insane. Like when someone rolls the crit right at the right time, we're all dead unless you roll a crit and it's like, it's never going to happen. And then you roll the crit and it's like, boom, we did it. And it just goes crazy. So yeah, that's fantastic.
That game brings out like my inner, I don't know, like sports jock. Cause I'm like, yeah, that's what's up. Yeah.
Like yelling at your players. Like you're in like you're in the NFL or something. It's quite funny.
What about you, Travis? What makes you scream in board games?
Oh man. I mean, I think you guys hit on a lot of the key ones, like at the end when you find out who's been lying to you the whole time. Like, what? Like it was you the whole time. Those are good ones. And I think the cooperative game you mentioned too, like when you all just get that final thing happens for you to win. That's one we'd love to make a good cooperative game sometime where that's kind of down the road, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, just fun revelations of information at the end are just fun. Get you going.
Yeah, no, that's, sure. That's always fun. Yeah, so good. Right, so before we head on to our last segment of the show, the swearing of oaths, I'd just like to give a quick shout-out to our community, including our Patreons. We couldn't do that this show without you guys. It's fantastic. So thanks for your support. If you do want to support us on Patreon, feel free to head to patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue, sign up and donate. You'll get exclusive podcast episodes that we record for our Patreons, as well as some great things that you can participate in. But please do not feel like you have to donate to be part of our communities. There's plenty of way to support us without joining Patreon. You can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a star rating and a review for us. Dan is still currently reading all of them out. You can use Spotify's new star rating system. So please get on board with that. We really, really appreciate it. You can get involved on the Board Game Barbecue community by joining Facebook, following us on Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube. And of course, there's our incredible Discord community. We always talk about how proud and happy we are about our community. It's a great place to be to discuss a whole range of things, not just board games, sports, movies, food, all types of stuff that you want to have a chat about. And there's always games going on. So get involved and support the show. All the links, of course, are in the show notes. But we will get to the ultimate and super stressful and 100% always satisfied of the oaths. Adrian, how you going?
Well, the problem is, I'll start with that. The problem with Travis, my oath this year is to play all my, I didn't do it in generations. I haven't got to go over 10 or 15 years, but I want to play all of my top 10 games solo, because I don't play any solo games. It's just not what I'm in it for. But after playing Teotihuacan solo, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it really offered me something that I didn't think I would find playing that game by myself, to the point of uninstalling the MOBA that I've been playing for 10 years off my computer and not playing any video games and just focusing on board games. Yeah. So my problem with playing on Mars solo is everybody in my house wants to play on Mars as soon as I'm opening it, including my mum. So I've played two more games of on Mars, but not by myself. Like, I can't every time. Oh, you get on. What are you going to play that now? Yeah, probably. It's like 7 o'clock though, so it'll go on a bit long. Oh, that's okay. I'm not that tired. And we will play on Mars. So my old oath is to play on Mars solo. I have failed, and I will make it my new oath to play on Mars solo. And I'm just going to close that door and put a lock on it, and I'm going to play it by myself.
What you remind me of, you know, like how there's always that meme about like you open up a packet of chips and your dog's like, "What you eating?" Like all that dumb stuff. That's like your family. It's like they hear that or like the kind of like weird box fart noise that on it makes. And it's like, what you playing? What you playing on Mars? What you playing on Mars without me? Yeah, that's a good one. So Travis, you have your own oath. It's pretty intense. I'm not gonna lie. I will not begrudge you if you don't want to add to it. But if there is one and you want to join in on our swearing of an oath group on our Discord, go ahead and submit yourself to the board game gods.
Oh man. So tell me a little more. So the oath, does it have, can it be like a tiny oath? Like like a one, like whatever.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be.
It could be like play a game off your shelf of shame in the next 6 months or something like that.
Okay. I can do that. There's been one I've had for a while, Chronicles of Crime.
Oh, Lucky Dead. Yeah.
Have you guys played that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. It's been sitting there looking at me for forever. So I want to play that before the end of February.
Nice.
That's very good. Please update us on Discord or on Facebook. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's know how you got
just
on.
Just do like if you're on Instagram, whatever, just hashtag swear an oath and whatever like that. It's always good fun. So my oath, and this is so long because of how it fell and I was on episodes. Mine was to play Burn Cycle. And I felt like I swore that oath like in September. And it wasn't that I hadn't done it. It was just that I hadn't been on for a long time. So I did do it. It is great. That game is like Metal Gear Solid, the board game, as you'd imagine it would be, because you're just ducking and weaving, trying to get out, like trying to avoid them. It's so much fun. But as it is with doing this type of stuff, I had to take it off the table because it's so big. It just takes up so much space on the table. It's unreal. But I thought it was fantastic. I talked to Def the entire time I was playing it. I had so many questions for him because he was super keen for me to play it. And I was like, Def, I'm sorry, man. Def's one of our other hosts, Travis, I should have said before. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I had to put it away. He's like, you coward. You coward. How dare you put it away? So, yeah, that was really good. I was going to swear an oath the other day to play an 18XX game, Adrian, because I hadn't played one before.
Yeah.
But I did it already, so I'm not going to make that my one. Instead, I got a game for Christmas called Oak by Brewmaster Games, and I'm really
I've seen that around, but know nothing about it.
You know what's going to sell you on this? You get to put hats and capes on your meeples. You get to make your meeple archdruids. Oh. So it's really cool. As So Very Wrong About Board Games said, the toyification is high on this board game. Like it's cool. So, but I think it's got a really good game underneath it as well. So I kind of mind swear the next time I'm on the show or the plate Oak. That is, however, going to be next week. So I'm going to put a little caveat on that. Well, who am I kidding? I don't have a life. I'll just play the board game. But very good. So that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much, Travis, for joining. It's been an absolute blast. Is there anywhere that our listeners can find you or Facade Games that you want to give a quick plug to?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. It's been pleasure. So fun chat with you guys. I mean, we're on Kickstarter now, Hollywood 9-47. That's kind of our big focus at the moment. Just go check it out. Watch our little video. Our video is like an old time newsreel type of vibe.
Love it.
It was really fun to make. So yeah, check us out . Thanks for having me.
No problem.
We'll put a link to the Kickstarter in the show notes.
Yeah. So, and how much longer is it running for? Sorry, we should
It goes till February 16th.
Oh, awesome. Plenty of time.
So,
loads of time.
Yeah.
And like this is 100%, like I'm not just saying because you hear your games are awesome, like so much fun, some of the most fun I've had in a big group. So yeah, get on board if you're interested or you've enjoyed what we've talked about. Give it a look in.
I would have to second that as well. Like they've been some of the best board game memories of 2022 for me as well. I have a Boxing Day thing here. We have like 40 odd people, and we all the gamers sneak into the game room, and we play 9-player Bristol. It was great fun, had a blast. I played it at the Brisbane Game Day, 9 players twice. That was a blast. It's always like a fun game to introduce to people that don't want to be in a game for 3 hours with that many people. Do you know what I mean? It's fantastic. So, yeah.
Cool. Thanks. That means a lot.
Man, no worries. All right. Well, thanks again, Travis. Thanks for joining us. Hey, AD, good chat. Let's not make it so long.
Good catch up, man.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, right.
Good. All right. And, and we'll see you all next time. Catch you later.
Bye.
Yeah, I think so.
It's very low key. Don't. Yeah. And you can make as many jokes, inappropriate jokes as you want. Like, don't.
All right.
Yeah. Expect with us too. Like, we're like, we're probably the
worst. Look,
they trust there us no very key. Little to just be us two on the podcast. Because usually not usually, but there's normally three. And then just because of the weekend, it's on and stuff like that. Saving Chris. You only have to save it because you bloody ruined it.